This week in Retronauts, we discuss the sins of a stolar empire. Sins of the Stolar Empire. Bernie Stolar.
Yeah, but
he can't be held wholly responsible.
No,
but that was the Dreamcast era,
right? Well, Stolar came onto the Saturn.
He was there. For the,
came onto Sega while the Saturn was like at its peak, if you could call it that,
and saw it to its bitter end.
While Kalinske was walking the plane.
Yeah, basically, what happened was Sony. Well, Stolar worked at Sony, and he saw Sony through its launch. And Sega also did their launch and said, wow, we did a really crappy job. Let's get the guy who made Sony a rockin' success.
Yeah.
So they poached him away, and he came on, and he basically had to perform triage because the system was already dying in, like, 1996. So he kind of made it as painless a death as possible and ushered in the Dreamcast era and did everything right, and it still flopped. But that's a different podcast.
Yeah.
That's the Dreamcast podcast. Yeah.
Let's rewind to when the Sega Saturn showed a lot of promise, and that was, 1993.
Let's rewind and do introductions.
Oh, that's
first.
Even better.
Ah. Yes. Why don't we set the context for this podcast? Hi, welcome to Retronauts. I'm the host, Jeremy Parrish, OneUp.com's... What the hell am I now?
You're senior editor of Expanding Possibilities and Horizons.
Yeah. I like that. It's actually expanded content, but I like
Expanded Possibilities and Horizons.
Senior editor of nebulous content.
Yeah,
What do I do? I don't know.
I think you're an Imagineer.
You do what you used to do.
Yeah,
you're an Imaginaut.
It's a features advanced research projects agency.
Oh, I love reorgs.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that's me. I don't know what my
job
is.
Do you love reorg or Sea Org?
What's a Sea Org?
Sea Org is the floating naval base of Scientology.
Okay, so also here on the podcast
is... Oh, yeah, that's me. Hi, Scott Sharkey.
And what are you now?
I heard you were editor about town or something.
Yeah, something.
Are these officials title? Are these titles official yet? Have we?
Well, when does this go live?
Next week.
Thursday.
As in, like, January 31st, Thursday?
Yes.
Yeah, might as well be. Just go with the new shit.
So also here is...
James Melky.
And you're, like, the grand poobah now.
Yeah, like, I asked Dan Shu what my title was today. He said, Editor-in-Chief of Video Games. All video games. Like, now I can go tell Electronic Arts what to do. Hey, I'm the editor-in-chief of video games. That's like...
It's like being king of the world or CEO.
King of the jungle.
I'm president of the internet.
Prince of life. But, like, within Ziff Davis itself, now there's an editor-in-chief of the video game side of things and the editor-in-chief of the PC side of things, which is Jeff Green. I'm the editor-in-chief of video game. Yeah, now Shane is...
I'm the executive editor.
Shane, introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Shane Bettenhausen, executive editor of the 1UP Network.
Is it executive editor of 1UP or of video games?
Video games.
Video games.
Video games.
That's true.
Very good.
Video games.
Very good.
I don't like PC games so much. My computer's like 10 years old.
Yeah,
I know.
When I told you my Sins of a Stolar Empire joke, you were like, I don't get it.
Why don't you buy a new computer?
Because they're expensive.
You don't spend your money on anything else, like clothes.
But like, why would I want to buy
a new... Have you seen his video game library?
Why would I want to buy a computer to play RTS games or something? I don't know.
When there's so many Saturn games still to buy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And finally joining us as the last-minute late edition
site director for 1UP. So that means I do
a
lot
name?
Of... Yeah, Sam Kennedy.
Okay. You gotta give your name with your voice so that everyone...
Be proud of yourself,
Sam. I thought
Sam.
You announced me.
I did.
Okay.
Everybody gets a really important sounding title.
So
except the interns. We call those shit monkeys now.
Wow.
So now that we've all fluffed our egos, we can move on with the actual podcast. this episode of Retronauts is about the Sega Saturn. I would like to start by throwing out the possibility that Sega Saturn might actually be the worst console ever.
Nope.
Are you on crack?
Nope.
No. God, no. Yeah.
I would say
I have a very good case for this. I'm not saying it had the worst games.
Right. You're gonna talk about the hardware and you're saying.
Oh, that, saying like, the system itself. Everything
disagree.
About the system, except the games, was just an abomination, an abortion.
The system,
but it was fully redeemed by its software library.
The hardware itself was thrown together
off the shelf,
right?
Like, you know, when the president of Sega or the CEO of Sega heard what Sony was doing with the PlayStation, at the last minute he went in and he was like, we need more processing power, throw in another processor, and it was very, very, very taped together.
Well, so that's how they had like kind of the dual processor,
yeah. right.
Separate but Jeremy, I can name three consoles that were its, you know, like its contemporaries that were all worse hardware right now.
Oh, are you talking like Jag? PCFX or something?
That's one.
3DO, Jag.
3DO. Oh,
I think 3DO might be better.
Jaguar was 64.
Oh, yeah. I can do math.
3DO hardware
badly.
Might be better. I was going to say PCFX, Playdia, and 32X are all worse than Saturn. They are.
I don't know about that.
Oh, you got it.
32X wasn't a console either. It was an add-on.
Yeah.
The thing with the Saturn.
That's actually,
it almost was a console, the Neptune, right? Or whatever.
Yeah. Neptune never came out.
Okay.
The thing with the Saturn, though, was that it was designed to be the ultimate 2D machine. Then they realized that tastes were changing, and then they needed to be able to do 3D.
That was what was so fucked up about it, because like Sega was like driving 3D in the arcades.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Did they not
right.
see this thing coming? Like,
baffling because Virtua Racing, all these games that Sega was creating in the arcade, they had moved beyond, you know, super scalar technology or whatever from the 16-bit era. They had really, really been pushing forward with cutting-edge 3D games.
Right, but
Virtua Fighter was a huge seller on 32X.
Arcade hardware all costs upwards of around like $10,000 a unit. How are they going to get that into homes?
Sega was also, well, no, I mean, I guess in 16-bit they were all about giving you the arcade experience at home, but then Sega kind of also, when they got to that generation with the arcade games, like the really expensive ones, they kind of were like, okay, that's the arcade experience. We want to kind of save that for the arcade.
Yeah.
A lot of ways, the Saturn hardware is like the PS3 hardware in that it has tons of different processors that you have to use at the same time, and a lot of developers didn't know how to do that, didn't want to write the assembly code required to make use of those.
Right.
So they would just use like one or two processors.
Yeah. The difference is that the PS3 was designed deliberately like that. This was the Saturn's comp was kind of slapped together.
That's not necessarily a recipe for disaster. But one of the best examples I can think of of a slapped together console was the Commodore 64. That was something that was put together literally in months out of arcade pieces. So it would be out in time for CES, and it was the most successful home computer ever. I mean, if you do it right,
that was a much simpler era. The Saturn was this kind of bizarre halfway between the 2D and 3D world creation.
Yeah,
it was designed as a 2D powerhouse, and it did a pretty good job of that. Although it had some very, very bizarre, inexplicable shortcomings. The Saturn could not do actual real transparencies. No alpha channels.
Yeah, it was all dithered.
That was one of the big selling points of the Super NES.
I know.
When the Super NES came out, they were like, check it out, Mario World. You've got transparent water. Well, no special programming.
People did figure out how to do real transparencies in the 2D realm, though.
People figured out how to fake transparencies on Saturn, but
it wasn't that dithered Moore screening that you're talking about. I can't really think
of any good Saturn games with good looking transparencies.
Didn't they just do like a rapid flicker or something?
KO Yuga Katai
had
real transparencies.
No,
with
you know what? Well,
but if you go back and play Symphony of the Night on Saturn,
right, you can tell.
That was a port of like the PlayStation. When the PlayStation, all the 2D effects were really like,
they were
3D,
polygons.
3D.
Yeah.
They
used polygons, but they still had to do that on Saturn. It's just that the polygons didn't support real transparency.
What they needed to do is redesign Symphony of the Night from the ground up for the Saturn hardware,
nobody wanted to redesign anything from the ground up.
The thing is, you had to, because the way it handled polygons, it uses like four-sided polys.
Right. And there were a few instances like Wipeout 2097, which is Wipeout XL here. That looks really good on Saturn, actually, because they took the time to because it uses quadrilaterals instead of triangles.
Yeah, it's fucking weird.
They had to go back and redo the whole game.
But it didn't look better than the PlayStation 1.
No, but it looked comparable.
Remember the water in Panzer Dragoon's Vi, or like when you got to that one big boss and they just had that really, really, really slick-looking water? Those were
2D, weren't they?
Those were 2D, but they were doing transparencies. The way they got that water effect was by blending two transparent textures together.
Right. The point was, though, that the hardware did not innately support transparency, whereas that was something that was just a system-level thing that was available on the Super NES.
Right. But
here was a system that was supposed to be like the Super NES and the Neo Geo and the Genesis all put together,
right?
Like the most awesome 2D thing ever.
Right.
And it still lacked some basic functionality that previous systems had.
It wasn't the worst hardware ever designed. It was like maybe the most bizarrely designed, you know, accidental hardware, but all the pieces were really powerful. Like that sound chip, they were trying to make up for the Saturn. That sound chip was incredible. The fact that were they Camelot at the time when they made Shining Force 3?
Yeah, right. Sonic Software Planning.
You know, they used that entire sound processor to kind of like lasso this extra code and data along, so that they could load from 2D overhead map to 3D battle scenes really, really fast.
So you had to use weird, sometimes really elegant things like that to accomplish anything.
But the individual parts were really powerful. Like, those processors, those 2D processors were powerful.
Yeah, but they weren't working together innately. You had to make them do it. And the thing was congealed more than it was built.
But when people really took advantage of the 3D processors, too, they could do some really good stuff on the Saturn. And it's like, but again, it was like...
It was extremely difficult.
It was extremely difficult.
No one really wanted... Like, Sonic Team basically did it.
Right.
And the Panzer Team.
But you had to code in that style, and you had to take the time and learn it.
Exactly. I mean, Virtua Fighter 2, that's all you have to look at. VF2 looks amazing.
Yeah.
It really does.
But Virtua Fighter 1 didn't.
No. Yeah,
that was actually because it was rushed.
The Japanese version.
It's generally regarded as being worse than the 32X version of the game.
Oh, it is. Totally.
Because it was rushed, not because the Saturn couldn't handle it.
Right, but then they put out
the thing is, anything that didn't take years to
remix, like, a couple months later, and it was way better, but...
Yeah, the whole thing is that, you know, here is a version of the game that's supposed to be a system seller. They'd already produced it for the 32X. I'm having trouble talking today. For the 32X, and yet it somehow wasn't as good because the system was so difficult to program for.
I mean, I think we can all agree that the Saturn is a weird beast. Right?
And as much as you praise the sound chip, it still had other really strange hardware oversights. Like, to get really, really good, smooth, high-resolution, nicely animated 2D, you had to actually add an expansion for the RAM so they could hold, you know, the RAM card. People talk about how great the Saturn's 2D is. Yes, if you put in the 4-megabyte RAM.
That's not entirely true. There were games that came from the arcade, like the Street Fighter Alpha games, that had high levels of animation at the time, that when they were porting it to the Saturn, they, you know, some things benefited from, you know, like they did this trick with Darkstalkers that if you played the same character against each other, you got twice the frames
animation.
Of animation, things like that. But games that were designed for the Saturn's limits were fine. Like,
sure,
you don't need, like we were talking about KO Ugekitai before, you don't need an extra RAM cart for that, you know. I mean, there were games that, if you wanted better performance, when Street Fighter Alpha 3 came out, for example, you know, that game was like had the benefit of multiple generations of 2D.
But the games that people always praise, the games that people always point out as examples of how great the Saturn could really be with 2D animation, most of those are games that required the 4-megabyte adapter.
I don't know. I really like Guardian Heroes, you know.
Oh,
and on top of that, to get really good, smooth FMV, you had to get the MPEG card attachment. Like, the native movie handling was quite a bit...
Heroes, though, is an example of, like, you know, that had tons of slowdown. Like, it was a great game and all, but, like, you know, that's not an example of, like, really awesome 2D, you know, as, like...
Right,
you know,
but I'm saying problems. that's a game that was designed for what, you know, they were trying to max out what the Saturn could do without any other add-ons.
Right.
It still had twice as much VRAM as the PlayStation, you know? So it was... The developers were still able to do a lot of things with Saturn that you could never do on the PlayStation.
Yeah, I think in the right hands, both 2D and 3D Saturn, 3D and Saturn could be very impressive.
Right.
Look at Grandia. When Grandia came out, there was no 3D RPG on PlayStation that looked anywhere nearly as good.
Right. But the problem was that to actually do that, to actually realize that, was an incredibly demanding, difficult proposition. And Sega was not really that eager to work with people, whereas Sony gave out all kinds of SDKs and
Case of corporate arrogance.
Right.
You know, it's
whenever Sega was definitely not in the position that Sony was with the PS2 and the PS3.
Well, right, and that's the other part of why Saturn was such a bungled system. Not just because of the hardware, but because of Sega's absolute utter just complete
hubris.
Yes, they're the complete mess that was Sega.
Let's go back. I think when Saturn first was revealed and the screenshots were showing up, I was impressed. We were all impressed. It looked like high res 2D, some good looking 3D games like Clockwork Knight, Panzer Dragoon. They looked good as launch titles. When I first bought my Saturn, Panzer Dragoon blew me away. I had not seen a home 3D game that looked that good. I mean, this is before PlayStation. This is when Saturn came out in Japan, way before 6 months before PlayStation, right? For 4 months. Anyway,
was it that far?
I thought it was.
It was
October. It was PlayStation October 1994 in Japan.
Okay, so that was 3 months. Two months. December 1994.
Yeah. And so for that brief period of time when Saturn was very new, it was next gen. It really was the best thing on the market.
Panzer.
Incredibly impressive.
Panzer made me begin importing video games.
Me too. I mean, Panzer blew me away. And to a lesser extent, Clockwork Knight and Daytona, they were good 3D.
But they were fun.
They were solid games. And then a few months in, there were things like Astal, which was a really beautiful
hand-drawn
2D scroller. And
it feels fat to play. That's the only word I can.
It does feel a little fat. And then early RPGs, the first RPG I imported was Magic Knight Ray Earth. Blew me away. Beautiful game.
Which
amazing.
Is kind of ironic.
Is the last game ever
given
came out.
Given that it was the last U.S. official release.
Right. So I'd say, from the outset, Sega Saturn had just as much momentum as PlayStation. I mean, PlayStation had a great launch too, but at the beginning, they were neck and neck.
Well, that's in Japan.
In Japan.
Yeah. On the U.S. side, that's where things were messy, and that has to do with Sega's
sneak attack.
Poor corporate decisions dating all the way back to the Sega CD, because Sega could not keep a clear vision of what they wanted to do. They were always playing catch-up. Sega, if you look at their last three consoles that they released, all three of them came out about a year before the competition, and as a result, after that 1 year advantage went away, they were grossly underpowered. So in order to catch up with Super NES, the Genesis had to have the Sega CD grafted onto it to give you spinning effects and rotation and scaling and things like that, to give you better music quality so you're not just using FM synthesis. So that was the start. That kind of split the market a little bit. Super NES was supposed to have a CD add-on, but Nintendo looked at how Sega CD had fragmented the market and how, the Turbo Duo wasn't doing that great, how the Sega CD wasn't doing that great, and they said, okay, maybe we don't need to do that. And they just continued to push advancing the system through add-on chips within the cartridges.
Right.
And then you have the 32X, which was a
huge abortion.
Terrible idea.
Well, I mean, Sega was completely sending mixed signals right there.
They were. Saturn had been shown.
Yeah. And I was one of the people, I was like, wow, okay, I'm going to get a Saturn. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I hear from Sega oh, there's a 32X that has Virtua Fighter. It's pretty much the same thing as a Saturn, which, it really wasn't. But still, I was sold.
I still remember the day 32X came out, I went to EB in the mall, intent on buying it. I got there. I looked at the game. I looked at the new issue of Game Fan, which had screenshots of the Saturn launch titles. I was fuck this. I'm not wasting my money on a 32X.
That's a classic case of
And I got it, and I was just because everybody was saying you can get Virtua Fighter on your 32X, and it's the same thing as a Saturn. And
a classic case of corporate confusion and consumer
that's
confusion.
The left hand, right hand, not knowing what they're
doing. It's expensive to create a hardware launch in any territory. Why do that when everybody who plays games knows that there's something better on the horizon? Mm-hmm. And when that something does come over the horizon, why release it at an overpriced price point? And why limit the amount of retailers? You can only get it through Toys R Us or something.
And then what they did with, when they had that
with
surprise launch or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That nobody knew about.
For those who aren't familiar with this, at E3 1995, Sega stood up and gave their presentation and said, here's the Saturn. It's our new console. It's coming this year. As a matter of fact, it's coming today. Yes, that's right. It was supposed to be coming in September, but we decided to launch it this month in May. So please, go out to Toys R Us and buy a copy.
So that day, I had played my friend's import Saturn, and I was about to import a Saturn for the last 6 months. I was like, wait, you know, I can wait. There's a lot of money. You know, Saturn was like $400. Mm. So that day at E3, I was like, holy shit, I've got to go to Toys R Us and buy a Saturn today. Yeah. And I did. And I went to Toys R Us and I bought a Saturn and a bunch of games, all that stuff, that day.
Well, you didn't buy a bunch of games because there were only three games available at launch.
There were five games.
Myst.
Five? Okay.
There were five.
Robotica.
Yeah, everyone wanted a copy of Myst. But that's all that was available for a few months after that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They launched and then...
Nothing.
Publishers
Street
were like...
Street Fighter the movie.
We didn't know about this. They didn't tell us that they were doing this and our games aren't ready yet. So it didn't give them that much of an advantage.
Third party, way to piss off retailers.
It pissed off retailers because they gave it to what? Like three different retailers and then all the other big retailers like Walmart, they were locked out in the cold.
Right. And then when September rolled around for PS1, it was like a huge event and Ridge Racer and Toshinden looked markedly better than what you're seeing on Saturday.
Well, what was most important?
Sony trumped Sega like an hour later with their press conference. Instead of like saying, here's the PlayStation, it's coming later this year. They just said $299.
Yeah.
That was it.
Right.
And everyone was like, wow, they just undercut Sega's price by $100. We'll wait for that.
What was a real big, even if the games between the Saturn and the PlayStation were close and fairly similar in quality, the big difference was that with the PlayStation was that their arcade ports like Tekken and
Ridge Racer,
they looked exactly like the arcade versions did.
Whereas Virtua Fighter did not look like the arcade.
So that caused a lot of problems for people's minds because they were like, oh, look at this inferior port of Virtua Fighter. Look at this arcade perfect port. And in those days, that was a big thing.
Yeah, so by the first Christmas, I mean, the onus was already there. Saturn was already playing catch up to Sony. And it was...
Well, I think the most important thing here is if the system is so arcane, granted, you can do an awful lot with it where you have to put time into it. That's a lot more money you have to put into it. That's a longer time difference you're going to have in releases when you're talking about, you know, arcade games. Somebody's going to have one out before. And not as much of a return on the investment when the install base is smaller. It's only going to get smaller if that keeps up. It was pretty much killed from the beginning.
One of the big things that was a big blow for a Saturn when you really think about it now is remember that Tomb Raider was originally a Saturn exclusive.
It was, yeah. Mm.
Well, actually, no, I talked to Toby Gard about that, and he said that the two games were developed in tandem, and Saturn was the one that they showed off first.
But oh, really?
That it was supposed to be like a simultaneous launch for Saturn and PlayStation.
I stand corrected.
I think Sega did manage to get like an exclusive launch window. On that. But it wasn't, you know, like a big deal. But go ahead.
Yeah, but like at the time, like one of the first things like that was shown for the Saturn in terms of like big third party things was Tomb Raider, and everyone was like, "Man, this is going to be so good," because nothing like that really existed at the time. 3D, like kind of open world exploration, you know, adventure game, an Indiana Jones style adventure game, you know. And then when it came on PS3 and it had all these other effects.
PS1.
Sorry.
Yeah. Get ahead of yourself.
PS1 and it had all the like the Gorod light shading and all those effects that the Saturn just couldn't do. That was a hard sell for Sega.
You know, an even bigger blow is the fact that Tomb Raider 2 and 3 were Sony exclusive. Like as soon as it came out and did so much better on PlayStation, Core was and Eidos were like, let's get into bed with Sony because that's where the money is.
Yeah.
That was one of the really first big decisive blows for
Sony.
It's
a shame because like Sega has this history of like really kind of like even though a lot of it was by accident, they still were kind of trendsetters, you know. They really were the experiment. They laid the groundwork, you know. They really adopted and embraced the CD-ROM technology, which opened up a lot of possibilities for them. Cool. Some of the soundtracks for some of their games are still some of the best soundtracks ever made. But they kind of really screwed up in not having like a good like, you know, video player.
You know, it's just a sequence of JPEGs, isn't it?
Well, actually, that's PlayStation Motion JPEG.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Saturn used Duck iMotion. It wasn't a very good codec. It was really grainy looking.
The problem was it was grainy, and if you have like the screen, it took up about
half the screen. Duck was the good one that came along halfway through. Like Cinepak was the original.
Yeah,
it looked terrible.
It took up like
terrible.
Yeah, like half the screen.
By the end of Saturn, there were some good video programs. But by the end of that first year, by the end of 95, in Japan, it was still doing really well.
Well,
it was.
The Saturn continued to do really well in Japan all through that generation.
Well, and like, I want to talk talk about some of the reasons it did, and that was particularly Capcom. Capcom was a huge supporter of Saturn.
Yeah.
Like, fighting games, as you mentioned, like X-Men, X-Men versus Street Fighter, Marvel Super Heroes versus Street Fighter, all the Street Fighter Alphas, they all were best on Saturn.
Well, we were talking about this
also
a little bit yesterday.
Also, don't underestimate, like,
the controller.
Even just like Virtua Fighter, the power of that franchise back then. And stuff
right.
Like that.
Well, and like Sega had other great fighting games like Last Bronx, Fighting Vipers, Fighters Mega Mix is awesome.
Yeah.
SNK also, a lot of great ports. And these games, most of them weren't on PlayStation. And if there were, they were tons of loading. They were really
Metal
stripped
Slug
down.
Is another one.
Metal Slug.
Like all those Neo Geo ports, Metal Slug was awful on PlayStation.
And the controller.
It was really good on
and Saturn's
controller.
Japanese controller
is the American.
Excellent.
We were talking about this a little bit yesterday about why the Saturn continued to do so well in Japan.
Well, there's a lot of
reasons. And the most important reason, I think, is because it was designed as a 2D system. And even though that was kind of its death knell, especially in the United States, that was really important because a lot of developers over there were not ready. A lot of them didn't make the jump to 3D, period. Like, you look at all the developers that were shaken out during the PlayStation era, and it has to do with the fact that they had all this 2D development expertise. They really had created this high level of craftsmanship and expertise, and that didn't translate into 3D. Hand-drawn sprite art just didn't translate into 3D, especially then when everything was really simplistic polygons with low-res textures.
A lot of mid-level companies who made like Super Famicom and PC Engine games, they could make Saturn games, whereas they really couldn't effectively make a good PlayStation game.
Right. That is essentially the same reason it failed in America. I mean, it's a really, really simple thing. The less money you have to put into development, the more money you can reap. It's why Wii is kicking ass in terms of volume.
Plus, there was one little thing that it didn't make them tons of money or really affect the console wars at the time, but you could make adult games on the Saturn.
Exactly. GAL games were huge in Japan.
Yeah, that was your favorite thing you said, right?
Well, it's on my list here of GAL games. Yeah. My favorite GAL game is the Yakuken Special, which is a strip paper, rock, scissors game for Saturn. It's excellent.
Oh, really?
But that was a big deal. Like,
more than you ever needed to know about,
like,
Shane Bettenhausen.
Red Label 18X games. These are, like porn games. Those were totally fine for Saturn. And as the Saturn got older in Japan, it became more and more of its market, and a big chunk of the market in Japan.
Mahjong.
PlayStation, you could not have the same level of nudity.
Yeah, I remember that was when I first started getting into importing that era, and I kept hearing about all these great import Saturn games, so I'd go to places like Tronix and NCS, and I'd click through the catalog and be like, what's with all these, like, girl, softcore, what the hell is this? I want,
they all
platformers.
Suck.
You're like, I don't want Dokusei 2 if...
Yeah, I didn't run any of that.
You know what? As bad as the business decisions behind the Saturn were, all the corporate decisions and stuff like that, the Saturn is still one of the best hardcore gaming systems ever made. Like, and you were talking about the Capcom stuff, but one of the best genres represented on Saturn that almost no other console can even come close to is the 2D shooter.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, I got a list.
It was kind of the successor to the PC Engine in a lot of ways.
A lot of really good games.
Yeah, but this is another...
No, the really good ones made it out here.
This is the other part, like the final part of the Saturn failure trifecta, which is that U.S. support was so absolutely terrible, especially once Bernie Stolar came over, because I think he saw that, the system was effectively dead in the United States. And so he said, we're not going to make much money by bringing Sokyogure and Tai
it's a
to
great
the U.S.
Game.
It might be a great game, but
such
he said...
Such a good game.
Published by EA in Japan.
But his decision was that there was no profit in bringing that game. It was best to just let the Saturn quietly die. Yeah.
They just want to cut their losses.
Right.
They want to cut their losses and move on.
It might have been the right choice.
That's the same thing they'd already done before.
But they might have cut it a little too soon because there was a one-year gap from 1998 to 1999 where Sega did not have a viable active console for sale in America.
And that's when some of the best games came out for Saturn.
Right. Like, Japan.
By the end of the second Christmas of Saturn, it was kind of over here. At that point, they were giving away the three best games free with the system. You got Virtua Cop, Virtua Fighter 2, and what was the third game?
Knights?
No.
Knights wasn't given away.
Daytona Remake. Yeah. You got all four free when you bought the game, and still people didn't buy it. And Saturn was, it was over. And
that was the Christmas that Knights came out.
Right.
But you can't underestimate, like, the Sega fragmenting the market like they did was just like, I mean, Genesis was still sort of viable for a while there, and then 32X. Like, can you imagine
Sega CD?
Like, can you imagine the support that Sega of America put into 32X? Like, could you imagine if all those games had released on the Saturn? Like, I mean, they weren't. Most of them weren't that great, but I mean,
no, but you've gotten like Star
What's
Wars
up,
Arcade.
Colibri?
Yeah, I know.
But what this did is it effectively made Saturn. If you still wanted to be a Saturn fan, you had to import games because most of the good games weren't coming out anymore.
Right. I think one thing we didn't actually even mention with the confusion over Sega CD and 32X was the fact that in addition to those, Sega had announced other systems like the Neptune, which was supposed to be a combination Genesis and 32X all-in-one. And the Saturn itself was supposed to be able to play cartridge games, which is why you had the cartridge slot.
Cartridge slot that is malfunctioning like no one's business.
Yeah, I don't even know why. They just like decided, let's just not support this cartridge
slot. You got to spray that shit with alcohol all the time just to get it to recognize
Sam brought up Knights, and like, I think Knights is a good game, and the sequel is underrated, but the fact that they did Knights instead of Sonic, very bad decision. The fact that there was no real Sonic game ever on this console.
Something recognizable.
Yeah, as much as that generation of Sega software was innovative and creative, I think they did have a ground-level failure to understand what their fans wanted. Not only did they not have a Sonic, they had Sonic R, which was ass. Mm. They had Sonic Jam, which was a nice little
collection
of last generation
games.
Where were
the other Sonic Jam, Sega franchise?
Sonic Jam.
It had that 3D hub level.
Yeah, and that gave you a taste of it. Like, when you see that, you at the time, you really thought, man, if only I had a whole game.
Yeah, I can't wait until they turn this into a whole game, and they didn't until the next generation.
Then they had that aborted Sonic
Extreme.
Yeah, what was that?
Sonic
American developed.
I thought that was a 32X game. Was that?
No, Saturn.
Extreme was a Saturn.
There was also 3D Blast, which was a Genesis.
A shitty Genesis port.
Right. But there was no Phantasy Star at all. No Streets of Rage.
See, that's what Nintendo gets right. Yeah. They always get it right, unfortunately. But Nintendo always gets it right that, like, you know, with every new system, there's going to be a fucking Mario, there's going to be a Zelda, there's going to be a Mario Kart, there's going to be, you know, an F-Zero. But you've got the foundation stuff there. You've got what people want, and then you build around that.
Sega did have Shinobi. That was good, at least. But
they didn't
even
publish it. They didn't even publish it. Vic Tokai published that in America.
The one with the FMV of the guy in the ninja suit?
It's a decent game.
It is a good game.
FMV, not so good.
That FMV, though. Wow.
But instead, Sega is investing in things like Three Dirty Dwarves and Mr. Bones.
Yeah.
And Bug.
I kind of like Mr. Bones.
I kind of like Mr. Bones as well. But
Three Dirty Dwarves, not so much. That was a really hard game.
They really didn't get what their fans wanted, and their fans said, we're not getting the games we want from Sega. Oh, but look at all these cool PlayStation games.
Yeah, so if you were just a U.S. Saturn fan who wasn't going to import, it quickly became the terrible place to be. Like, it really did. Well, I watched it happen to people.
It's telling that I could go to Babbage's in Abilene, Texas in 1998, and the Saturn section was half imports.
Right.
I ended up buying, when I got my Saturn, I was kind of late to the party, but I ended up getting Metal Slug. I ended up getting like MSX Antiques. What a bizarre choice to sell in America. All kinds of compilations and collections, the Ghost and Goblins collection.
I think we should talk about the good things that the Saturn had.
I bought all of those. And not only did I buy them, I bought them for like $15 because no one even wanted
to. I bought Radiant Silvergun at the EB I worked at for $40.
Yep. I saw Radiant Silvergun on sale in the US in the middle of Texas.
Yeah.
Because that was the only way they even had a chance of turning a product.
I also
don't forget like the power of marketing too. Like Sony had the cool
Saturn marketing was awful.
It was like what was it? I remember the print ads.
I think it's Saturn or whatever.
Yeah, it was like a bald chick with rings around her.
Yeah, it was like great. That's a system I'm gonna get.
Whereas Sony really they got it. They did everything right.
They made video games cool, whereas Saturn still really wasn't cool. Mm-hmm. Not really.
They were like the dumb kid trying. Or, you know,
actually,
the
I think a lot of cases Sony succeeded despite their marketing. Honestly,
no, early on.
Well, they had the Polygon Man.
Yeah, they had him for like a month, and then like they moved on to better stuff.
But think about Saturn had Netlink. Saturn had online gameplay.
Yeah. Well, so did Nintendo. Honestly, if you what are you talking about? X-Band?
I mean, no, I'm talking about Sega. Like X-Band was a third party thing.
Yeah, I know.
Sega Netlink was a real thing, and they were basically giving it away, giving away good games that you could play with it, like Saturn Bomberman, and nobody cared. And PlayStation never had online play officially, yet, you know, no one seemed to care that, that Sega was once again ahead of the curve, like too ahead of the curve, and floundering.
I actually sold my copy of Radiant Silvergun, but then I bought it back just in time.
I sold off like my entire Saturn collection.
Well, if we're talking about things that Sega did wrong, the last year of Saturn America was a disaster. Yeah. There are very few releases. They were hard to find. Like,
well, that's what I was talking about.
Good luck finding Panzer Dragoon Saga.
Some of the best software came out in the final
Sadly enough, people
years.
Didn't even buy those games. I remember going to Toys R Us and seeing like four copies of Panzer Dragoon Saga on clearance for $20.
God.
And yes, I kicked myself for not buying
like Shining Force 3, great game. We only got terrible
voice acting.
It's a pity, though, that like we never got parts 2 and 3.
I know.
Yep. You know?
And then, you know, their biggest third-party publisher, like their most hardcore third-party publisher, was Working Designs. And once Bernie Stolar took over, he managed to...
Admittedly,
Vic Ireland does seem like a pretty temperamental person who is easy to offend, but he really, really just like... quashed the sales of Saturn. He killed the market, and Working Design said, okay, we're taking our ball and going to PlayStation, where they did very well for themselves.
But Bernie Stolar was the reason why that like Vic Ireland went Saturn exclusive for
in
a while.
In the first place, right, because he was like no 2D games on PlayStation.
Yeah, and Bernie Stolar was like the third-party vanguard over at Sony during that time. And he didn't want to bring over RPGs.
I would love to get the two of them in a room sometime.
Oh, man.
For a podcast. I'll see if I can get them. Yeah, I'll work on that. Okay, so yeah, so we've pretty much talked about why Saturn was a troubled system.
Now I'm all depressed.
But don't be depressed, because all you have to do is think about the games for the system.
Well, Sam, all you have to do is go turn on your Saturn.
And I think Saturn is one of the last great importer's paradise. Like, if you go to Tokyo now and go to the right game stores, you'll see, like, all these awesome games that never came out in America.
Say it.
Dodonpachi is right here.
Dodonpachi Daojo?
No,
that was PS2. Oh, was it?
Which was fun.
Oh.
Which was very fun. But the original Dodonpachi was great.
What system was Donpachi on?
It was an arcade game, I think.
Yeah.
Did it not come out on a home system? See, I don't follow this.
I wonder exactly what percentage of the listenership is going to know what the hell you're talking about.
Donpachi came out.
These are just random sounds to me.
If people who are avid Saturn fans are listening, they know because...
They know.
Yeah, these games were burned into the skull.
Donpachi, one of the best 2D shooters ever. Mm-hmm. Sokyu Gurantai.
Yeah, that was awesome. Oh, man.
Radiant Silvergun, obviously. Yeah. Guardian Heroes. Saturn Bomberman.
I mean, Thunder Force 5, way better on Saturn.
That's one of my favorites.
It's way better on Saturn than on PlayStation.
What about Layer Section? Was that...
Layer Section is called Galactic Attack.
They did publish it in the U.S.
The title games were very good.
Yeah. Yeah, Taito had a few really good, like the Darius game is good. There's tons of good shooters. And
In the Deep?
In the Hunt?
In the Hunt. The Japanese name is slipping me.
I know what you're talking about. And there's also...
So good.
Although it's not the RPG system that, like, the Super Nintendo or the PlayStation is, it does have a lot of good stuff, like Ray Earth, Lunar Silver Star Story, Grandia, Dark Savior,
Baroque. Which is... They're bringing to DS now?
But the Saturn version is totally different and a lot better, actually.
Yeah.
And Dragon Force, which is... possibly my favorite tactical game of all time.
That's great.
It's really good.
Wachenroder.
Wachenroder.
Not so good.
Legend of Oasis, it's decent.
I thought that game was really pretty good, but then I accidentally erased my game save file, like...
You know,
90%
most of the
way through the game.
Most of the really notable, like the good high quality RPGs you've mentioned, the third party ones, ended up on PlayStation anyway. Mm-hmm. Like both of the Lunar games,
it's true.
Yeah, but
ended up on PlayStation and were actually
the Grandia
better.
Localization for PlayStation was ass.
Yeah. Well, that was a Sony CEA localization.
Yes.
They
yes.
still do a bad
Lunar
job.
Lunar one was yes. a little, although it's not, goofy too. It's I like how they completely reversed the motivations of the protagonist and the bad guy.
Yes.
And I thought that was cute.
Oh, then it's not a good RPG. Linklaver Story has the best 3D tree. Of a Sega Saturn generation. It does.
And what about Silhouette Mirage?
Oh, right.
Yeah. Okay, Silhouette Mirage.
That was another one that working designs fucked up. That was great.
Yeah, better on Saturn.
Playable in Japan on Saturn from Treasure. Unplayably horrible in America from Victor Island.
You have to punch every little guy 50,000 times and you still can't beat the damn thing.
Yeah. Well,
the platformers,
were
really...
Did that come over here?
Deep Fear.
No,
Deep Fear was not a platformer.
That was a survival horror.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to the guys at Sega, like Jason Kuo and like the localization guys who have been there for a long time. They said that Deep Fear was actually like scheduled to come over here, but the conditions just made it like really impossible.
Well, what was Deep Fear?
It was a Resident Evil clone
with
fish. On a submarine.
Yeah, it was like Deep Star 6 or something. Yeah.
Well, the Japanese version, all the voices are in English, and that game was directed by Reiko Kodama, creator of Phantasy Star.
It would have been an easy port.
It would have been. I think, well, speaking of adventure games, I think adventure games is another of my favorite genres on Saturn. And there's a few good ones that came out in America that you might not have played. My favorite being a game called Lunacy, which is called Toriko in Japan.
Wow, yeah.
And everybody's played it here. It's
Atlas.
It's excellent. All right. They also have...
It's really hard to find.
It's very, very hard to find. Mansion of Hidden Souls for Saturn. It's a sequel to the...
Oh, no, I had that one.
Sega CD game. It's not great.
No, it's not. I hate it, actually.
Like, you know what?
I like the all-British voice acting.
You know what was a super...
I fell asleep.
You know what was a super cute game, which didn't come out over here, but I thought it had a lot of charm? Steam Gear Mash.
That was a cute little game, actually.
Cats Follow You Around.
And Willy Wombat, remember that one?
No. Anyway, oh, yeah, I do remember that.
It's by the guy who does Famitsu art.
The thing that's getting me is every time we mention one of these titles, I get like the Sagata Sinchiro ad stuck in my head.
Well, we should talk about it.
Yeah,
in Japan.
I think that's the reason it succeeded in Japan.
Another part
honestly.
Of the reason it was so successful were these ad campaigns with this crazy guy named Sagata.
Well, it was a play on Sagata Sinchiro. It was the judo thing, the old flick.
They even made a game about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, here's another thing, another big factor of why. Now, you guys were talking about how successful the Saturn was in Japan. It wasn't that successful, like we're making it sound, but it was Sega's most successful
game
effort
there. Games sold millions, million copies. There were million,
sold. I think they sold 6 million systems in Japan, 9.3, I believe, worldwide.
Yeah,
right. But the
so that's
one
a,
of the,
that's a success.
It's successful
compared to Mega Drive and Mega CD.
Right,
yeah.
But you know, compared to like what eventually would sell on PlayStation, it wasn't that big. But one of the big reasons for that
it was no
success,
DS.
It was no DS, but one of the big reasons for that system success was Sakura Taizen.
Oh,
that's
right.
True,
yeah, that was that weird dating game / RPG robots and little
basically,
girls.
Yeah, turn-based strategy. Yeah. The turn-based strategy parts were actually fantastic. The reactive
I just
dating
looked at it
parts,
and saw cherry blossoms.
So much.
It took place
really.
In like a Victorian steam powered World War I where you could save the world by dating 12-year-olds. Is that right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest franchises for sure. And also, Konami's Tokimeki Memorial became a huge hit on Saturn. I mean, it was on every system, but the Saturn version was really good.
Yeah, I think it started on PC Engine.
PC Engine originally. And
some scenarios written by Hideo Kojima.
Really?
Some of it directed by...
Theme song written by Iga.
Yep. Igarashi.
What?
Yeah.
Oh,
no, I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah, Tokimeki Memorial is like the secret nexus of all Konami
talent. It's a dirty secret.
Well, and we can't talk about Saturn without talking about my favorite developer publisher, Warp.
God.
Which I bring up a lot, but no. But D and Enemy Zero...
Headed up by my personal friend, Kenjino.
D and Enemy Zero both became million sellers, and it was during the Saturn PlayStation era that he famously went on stage at TGS and stomped all over PlayStation's Moomoo character and said he's only making his games for Saturn.
Actually, I talked to him about this like every now and then. He actually clarified that on, it was amazing. Like they had this Sony conference, you know, to announce like
it was in front of a giant PlayStation logo.
A giant PlayStation logo. Kenji Ino gets up there, and like all these Sony executives are there to like, you know, watch him say that he's going to develop exclusively for PlayStation. And he's up there and he's giving his speech or whatever. And behind him, the PlayStation logo morphs into a Sega Saturn logo. And he says, "I will be developing exclusively for Sega Saturn." But he had, I don't know.
Videotaped that and put that up like on
God, the somebody's yeah, got
these days. These days, that would be all over the internet.
Oh yeah. But how the hell would he get his testicles through doors? He'd have to like put them over his shoulder. Like Santa
apparently,
closet.
Like he had some very very tight connections inside Sony, like the big father figure mentor types. And one of the big executives at Sony said, like, "I don't care what Kenji did. You're not going to fuck with Kenji." And that's why he didn't get, like,
he's,
you know,
like a made man.
Pushed
killed.
In. Yeah, pretty much.
Pushed
so,
out of a train.
Yeah, but every time I hear that, I'm just like, that's just amazing. You never see anybody do that. You don't see, like, John Riccitiello or something get up there and, you know, morph the PlayStation 3 logo into an Xbox 360 logo and say, EA is going.
Sega gave him carte blanche. I mean, they really supported Enemy Zero. It was a huge production. And they even let him make the real sound game,
real
which
sound.
Was a game without graphics.
Game with no graphics. Yeah. All sound. I mean, even Enemy Zero with its, you know.
Flaming Grandpa Rape?
Well, what?
Was that Enemy Zero? Or
that's Haunting Ground.
Oh, sorry.
Enemy Zero is invisible enemies.
Oh, right, yeah. Right.
Yeah. You're going down these corridors, and, like, it was actually a really frightening game.
It was.
You know, it was very challenging.
And hard as shit.
He was taking advantage of the whole, you know, the CD-ROM technology, using sound, positional sound, cue sound.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, Sega, as a platform holder in Japan, they were really creative and doing lots of different things and very prolific. They published a ton of shit. A lot of games. I think they did a good job in Japan. In America, not so much.
Right. You know, where was Sega of America with, like, games that would appeal to the U.S. audience?
Well, we already
established
what? They were killing it.
They weren't sure what would appeal to the American.
Three Dirty Dwarves.
Right. You know what's funny is that Sega of Japan, like, they don't get credit for it, but Sega of Japan ends up being, like, one of the most, like, they really foster creativity. This is a company that would eventually, like, go on to nurture and publish stuff like...
Past tense, says Jeremy.
Stuff like Seaman,
Jets
right?
And Jet Set Radio. And
yeah, those kinds of things. Yeah, maybe it's past tense.
No, I really feel like... Yeah, I really feel like Sega's creativity came to a head at the Dreamcast era. Like... All the games that they released for Dreamcast were just fantastic, creative, original.
But that was
it
in
was,
Japan.
It was building up steam in on Saturn, definitely.
Each
but.
System, like whether it was Socratizen or Seaman, had this like weird, like kind of like it was almost like Grand Theft Auto 3 for them. It's like it wasn't a huge hit straight out of the gate, but these things just kept on selling. Like Seaman just kept on selling, right? But none of that ever trickled over to the American side. Like I know plenty of like smaller publishers that have consistently tried to bring Socratizen to the States and have been shut down by Sega of America each and every time. Why? Let them publish it.
Well, they even made, what was it, Socratizen 5 that was supposed to be for Americans?
Set in America.
Like, right. The cowgirl.
But cowgirls do not an American success make.
No, that was kind of a mistake. But clearly the developers want to catch on with American audiences.
That just shows you how far off, like, the reason why Japanese development is stumbling at times now in a big way.
Because they're trying to develop for Western audiences.
And they don't get it. They just think, like, oh, give people a John Wayne accent.
And
yeah, seriously.
Well, it's not like Americans really get how to sell to Japanese Japanese gamers either, but
true.
That market is marginal enough at this point. Like, Japanese gamers don't even buy Japanese games anymore.
You know, like, I'm pretty sure that Ken Levine and the 2K Boston team are not losing and sleep over whether or not they sell.
Should we give little sisters bigger eyes and maybe make them talk with a squeaky moe voice? Yeah, I don't think that's big on their list of to do.
Nope.
You should be able to take them out for hamburgers, get their clothes off.
So what other good stuff?
I have another element. Another element that helped Sega to be popular in Japan was actually Evangelion. Sega was an initial investor in Evangelion. They were the main advertiser during the show, and they made
Shinji was always playing Saturn.
He was playing Saturn in the show.
Why do you hate me, Dad? Let me play Socratizen.
There were several Evangelion games for Saturn.
They were bad.
They were Evangelion games on Saturn.
Very in quality. My favorite one is like the digital card collection. But they
not girlfriend.
A
game only you could love.
But like Evangelion 1 and 2 sold like a lot of copies in Japan. They were huge. So
they'll buy anything. They'll buy like a million of like the next Gundam game, even if it's the worst thing you've ever played.
And actually, the Gundam games for Saturn are pretty good. Like the first one is 2D
the first
shooter.
What was the three the one that was released in three parts?
Oh.
The 3D one?
Gundam Gaiden's? Yeah, I didn't like those as much, but I think those were called Gaiden's. I'm not sure. I think so.
Yeah, it came in three parts anyway, and they were overpriced.
Yeah.
And they were like three, but the gameplay was pretty good, and they were the only games that you could use the Virtual On stick with.
Right.
Virtual On,
Sega Rally. Sega Rally for Saturn is excellent.
Still excellent. And the improved version that they released in Japan, even more excellent.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The thing that always sold Saturn for me was the fact that it was kind of like the final resting place of all these game types that you saw that thrived on 8 and 16-bit systems, platformers and shooters.
Mahjong.
Like, they kind of reached their technical peak on Saturn. They really had a lot of depth, a lot of just beautiful animation, quality, substance, great controls.
Definitely the 2D fighter.
You had to import to get them, but things like Kyoyugi Katai, which you think is overrated because you're a hack. Super Tempo, you know, all the shooters we talked about.
I'm a Tempo fan. Try Rush Deppy. Anyway, the reason KO Yekitai is overrated is because it's not as good as the first KO game, which was actually, I felt like, a pretty good shooter.
They're not the same thing. It's like trying to compare Super Mario 64 to Mario Kart.
I thought the first one was a much better shooter than the second one was a platformer.
The second one was nice. The
Saturn one was really nice because it gave you shooter as kind of a break in between stages. So you had standard platforming with really big stages.
But that game was really beautiful.
Yeah, the enemy designs were really whimsical, like huge enemies, the giant tank that spilled green tea on you.
The backgrounds.
Things like that. There were lots of visual gags throughout the levels. Like when you're flying through space, there's Laika the space dog just kind of floating along. Just random things like that. Lots of anachronisms. So it was supposed to take place in KO Japan, like 19th century, but they didn't really care. So you also had things like the Victor, his master's voice, gramophone dog, just as a random thing you could pick up and throw it in
JVC
a random level.
It.
Right.
Well, look, whenever I go back and play Saturn and PlayStation, I'm always impressed by how beautifully high-res most Saturn games look. The default mode on Saturn is high-res, it looks great, whereas PlayStation, very few games are in high-res mode.
Had a lot more colors to work with, too.
Yeah. It was like you have the Chrono Cross menu screen, and that's about it.
That's about it. internal section. That's the only game I know that's in high-res mode on PlayStation 1, almost.
Plus Pepsi Man.
Oh, and Pepsi Man.
Pepsi Man in the Japanese version. I swear to God, when I was playing Fighting Vipers, I imported that. I brought it home. My roommate and I were playing it. We were all like, oh, man, this is so awesome, so fast, so fun, so cool. All of a sudden, we were playing a match, and all of a sudden, Challenger comes. I was like, what the fuck? Would somebody step on a fourth controller? What's going on here? All of a sudden, like, the Pepsi Man, like, you know, logo comes up where, like, you know, he's like, schwa. And then Pepsi Man's there. I'm like, oh, shit. And fighting Pepsi Man, and he becomes unlockable. And he's awesome. So awesome.
I was congratulating Capcom earlier for being a great Saturn supporter. I'm going to give Konami some demerits, though, because although they had a few really good collections, like,
Konami did not care.
Right. But, like, the Proteus collection was great. You know, like, the collections, like, the shovelware was
their
great.
Their collections were better than they were on PlayStation.
But.
Yeah. Proteus, Gradius, Salamander.
Right.
Not really worth
almost nothing original for Saturn. And the ports of PlayStation games like Vandal Hearts, Suikoden, and Castlevania are shit.
Yeah.
They're really crappy.
Very
and how do you make Suikoden a crappy port?
I know.
That game could have run on a Super NES just
fine. It seriously could have. Yeah. That's why I hate it.
Oh, come on.
No, I really don't like Suikoden. I can't get into it.
Suikoden 6 on Wii, you're not excited?
No. Sorry.
Come on, you can't tell me that you don't like Suikoden 2.
No,
like,
I really don't.
Regardless of technology,
you know
that
why?
Game is just a sweet
RPG. Because I can't walk diagonally. I have to go in, like, northeast, west, south.
Okay, even though the Saturn, even though the Saturn was euthanized in America before its time, in Japan it really did last about long enough. But then you see that video of Shenmue on Saturn, and you go like, "What the fuck? How is that possible?"
I've always wondered if that was running on development hardware or if that really could have run on Saturn.
The rumor is development hardware with extra RAM. That's what I heard. Like
so they
two
would
RAM
have
cards,
to release, like an 8 megabyte RAM card just to play Suikoden.
Either that or the environments were like way small. And you had to load every 3 seconds as you move from one area to another.
Yeah.
But still.
But what could have been?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of crazy.
If that game
How much do you think Shenmue has to do with Sega's problems? So much money was sunk into that game. I saw a message board thread the other day saying it was like $70 million on Shenmue 1 and 2.
I mean, do you view that as like the turning point?
I'm pretty sure that's
the turning point, but Sega, I feel like that was an example of some of the things that Sega
wrong. I think it was somewhere between that and when Sega like took all its teams and brought them back together. That was, for me, that was like the death knell when all like
I can tell you exactly what there are two factors that led to Sega's like bitter transformation. One was Isao Okawa's death, because that was the guy who, out of his own pocket, continued to bankroll Dreamcast development. You know, he was the original CEO of CRX,
CSK.
CSK. Yeah. And you know, once he died, he was their benefactor. Once he died, it was like nobody knew who was running what anymore, and everybody just had these, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen. The second big factor was them getting bought by Sammy.
Pachinko company.
I would rather have seen
where Namco's headed these days too.
I would have still rather have seen the Bandai Sega merger that almost happened all those years ago before all the Sega employees like revolted and said no way. You know, and I can understand them saying no way, but you know, them getting bought by Sammy was like.
But you know, that was a really heartbreaking time, because not only was Sega bought by a company that was mostly just about pachinko, so was SNK. So you had these two like legacy hardware creators purchased by companies that were like, so how can we use these video game properties to, you know, sell our pachinko?
And they were
machines.
Underwhelming mergers. When you heard about something like Square Enix merging, you're like, holy crap. Nobody else in the world
like
might as well make RPGs.
Yeah, that's like Nintendo Sega merger, you know,
seriously.
If that happened in 2000.
Yeah. But when you heard Sega Sammy, you're like, what?
Sammy? They made Amagon, right?
Yeah, so in that way, Saturn, you know, there's kind of like four eras of classic Sega, from Masters into Genesis to Saturn to Dreamcast. And, you know, Saturn was, in a way, a peak for like, the purity of Sega, like, leading a charge in Japan, being a market leader for a time.
Well, it was where they really got their act back together. After all the confusion, all the different, you know, the split technology and all the what are we doing, where are we going, that they suffered during the late Mega Drive Genesis era, they finally got everything back together, and they kind of seemed to have this unified front, and they carried that through into Dreamcast, and really they really seemed to have their act together. But I kind of feel like for a lot of people it was too late at that point,
and
because
really,
they had already sort of pissed in the pool.
It really only lasted from like 95 through 96 in Japan. At that point I was importing Saturn Fan Magazine and loving it, and like so excited about Saturn. But by the time of Final Fantasy VII, the dream was kind of over. Really,
Final Fantasy VII and Resident Evil, were really
the Saturn version of Resident Evil, good.
I'd say that the N64 version of Resident Evil 2 is probably a better conversion,
and a little more pointless at the time you got that. How much did that thing cost? It was ridiculous. The fact that they had to cram so many chips into it, and then at that point you could probably pretty much just buy a PlayStation and a copy of Resident Evil 2 for what you had to put into that.
Yeah,
don't forget though, like God, no, I totally lost my point. Say something, Shane.
Well, I find strange, like the weird legacy of Sega Saturn is most of these games have no home now. They're not on Virtual Console. They're not on anywhere you can play them.
Yeah.
Like,
well, how the hell are you going to emulate that fucking thing?
I know.
It's a nightmare.
Mike and I were just talking about this morning. What a shame that you can't, because, like, so many people
I want to be playing Guardian Heroes right now.
Right. Or Radiant Silvergun.
Right.
Well, yeah. I know that GameTap was working on Sega Saturn compatibility.
Didn't they hire a guy that was working on an emulator beforehand?
Yeah, they've actually released a few Saturn games, Panzer Dragoon.
Oh,
I think.
I thought that was always based on the PC version.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
I'm pretty sure, from what I've heard, it is based on the Saturn version. But those are like
early
simple Saturn games.
Where they're using like one of the processors.
The PS2 Sega Ages remake of Panzer 1 is based on the Saturn code.
Oh, okay.
I don't know about the GameTap one. It's all right. It's just, like, a little weird because you're kind of used to seeing the really kind of, like, rough charm of Panzer Dragoon. It's like an overachiever. On PS2, it's just so slick. That
yeah, it's
like,
kind of the difference between Metal Gear Solid and Twin Snakes. Like, yeah. The abstraction in the original Metal Gear Solid kind of sells it for me. Right. When you see those same characters
see the guys
doing
like,
those things
yeah.
and they actually have faces, it actually seems kind of weird.
Sterile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just remembered my favorite Saturn game that we haven't talked about. Saturn Bomberman. I mentioned it in passing.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned it.
Yeah. I mentioned passing. Biatch. But 10-player?
10-player.
I believe that I will be mixing Saturn Bomberman as the interstitial
yes,
soundtrack
yes.
for this episode.
The tragedy was the 10-player really wasn't that fun.
You couldn't see.
You couldn't see anything.
And also, you needed the mega tap.
You need 2 megataps to play 10-player.
Oh, that's right. You had to daisy chain just to be able to get everyone.
Remember the Bomberman head version?
I have one.
Those rock.
I love that thing.
Yeah. So 8 players was actually the most fun because you could stuff 8 players into a regular stage and that was really, really fun.
Yeah, but like in order to play with that many people, you actually had to play on like the microscopic map.
Yeah.
Where you're like basically this white dot running around leaving bombs. But that game looks perfect today. I wish somebody would, instead of just making all these new Bombermans,
make an online version so you actually
games.
Can have the screen zoomed in.
Are you saying that you would rather have that over Bomberman X-Zero?
Oh my God. No, but seriously.
I don't understand.
Eight Bomberman games came out this week. I'm not going to play any of them, but Saturn Bomberman, like that had the perfect difficulty curve in terms of like getting through single player mode. The multiplayer mode was obviously fantastic, but what was really great about the game was the soundtrack. That soundtrack was so ahead of its time. Yeah. You listen to it now, it's like straight up like new electronica and mixed with drum and bass, and it sounds fantastic now. Great melodies, great tunes, great beats, great sound quality. It is one of the best, most undiscovered soundtracks.
The video game equivalent of Tago Mago
by Can.
Oh, wow.
I was going to say,
the Germans.
Least expected publisher for Saturn, NX.
Wait, what did they do?
Anybody remember the game that NX made for Saturn?
No.
It was near the end in Japan?
No idea.
Shit.
It was called, like, Island of the Mysterious Wind, and was like a point-and-click adventure game, but it was a big deal at NX, who's now part of Square Enix, and who makes Dragon Quest. They did publish a game for Saturn near the end. Very strange.
I bet there was this brief pity pat. A brief pity pat with the Sega Saturn fans' heart where they thought,
Dragon Quest?
Does this mean Dragon Quest 7 on Saturn? No, it doesn't. No. You barely got it on PlayStation.
Yeah. That's true. Man, talk about Saturn makes me kind of sad.
Saturn was also really good for playing VCDs. So, like, you know, when Sharky would pick up his Chinatown porn.
Yeah.
It was also great.
Yeah.
That just reminded me of all the times I failed to buy
Lots
you
of
that.
Chinatowns
that,
in Maine, huh?
That oh, Dural yeah. disc. You finally got it, though.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you did?
You're such a dick.
Fuck.
God. All the things I do for Shane and all the things he hasn't done for me.
Said about Saturn games not really having a home these days. That really, that the more I think about it, that really is kind of
really like there's a lot of good games that no one's ever going to play.
It's sort of crushing because every system prior to that has Virtual Console or it has GameTap or whatever.
There's no shortage of like Sonic the Hedgehog 2 ports from Sega or
right.
whatever.
Well, every system post Saturn, it's easy to find on eBay or whatever because those were released in kind of like the internet digitally connected era. So that stuff's easy to find. Right. But Saturn is like this mysterious void.
And the big shame out of it all is like
a lot of people, you have to go to Japan to
find
the games.
A lot of people never had the chance to play them like the first time. It's like okay, Super Nintendo or whatever, all these other systems you've played, you had the chance before if you wanted to. These games, like 20,000 copies of Panzer Dragoon Saga were ever released in the U.S.
I thought it was five.
No, they did a second run.
They did four printings, actually, I heard.
Really?
Yeah.
Still, I mean, it was like,
well, it's
it
not
still
like
sells
can,
for 200
You
bucks.
Can't fault anybody for this, though. I mean, it is a huge technical hurdle to do that. I mean, it's not just is the architecture weird. The way it handles 3D is weird. The whole thing. Well, I mean, if you see anything emulated, it's always going to be an early title that used
really,
one processor.
Really big problem is that a lot of the code from those days, I guess they just didn't take care of that stuff.
It's gone.
But a lot of that code is just gone.
Well, that's why Magic Knight Ray Earth, even though it came out in 1995, it didn't release here until the last Saturn
1998.
Game. Because
very
they misplaced the code.
They had misplaced the code.
Oh, my God.
That's what happened there.
Here's a little secret. I promised my friend I'd never mention this, but screw it. He don't care. Princess Crown.
That was the game I was going to mention. Yeah.
Princess Crown. Yeah.
Which finally came out for PSP.
Princess Crown came out for PSP, but what most people don't realize is that the PSP version is a straight emulation.
It's emulated.
It's a straight emulation on an emulator. Same thing with Devil Summoner, the Saturn Devil Summoner that came out for PSP as well. Those are straight emulations. The reason why they can't make it... they can't make those for America is because they don't have the original code, and you needed the original code.
So you could actually translate
change the text.
It. Yeah. It's already compiled.
You can't backwards engineer that code.
Not that Sony CEA would let them publish a game that was just a straight Saturn conversion anyway.
Right. But you know,
even
one
if
of the
it's
most
like a rare cool game.
Until that PSP version came out, like Princess Crown was one of the most.
So expensive.
I mean,
it was really hard
no, seriously,
to buy.
You look at that game now; it's just as beautiful as any of VanillaWare's like.
Modern stuff.
But now it's like $60. It's really cheap when you buy it in Japan now.
That's good.
Well, I mean, it's like, I don't know what you're going to end up paying for any game. There's some Ninja
games
for Saturn.
Because of the remake, it's
Psychic,
come down in price.
You just mentioned Psychic Assassin Taromaru.
Which
is actually a really good game.
It costs
like $250.
It's not as good as people make it out to be.
It's not $250.
If it was like $34, I'd go buy it.
I'd buy that game for $50 just as a novelty, but like it only became very expensive. Expensive because of the fact that it's very rare.
Well, it was published by Time Warner.
Yeah, that was really not that great a game.
I came this close to buying it this year at TGS. But,
really?
But ultimately, cooler heads prevailed.
Speaking of Time Warner, why did they release the Saturn version of Virtua Racing?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like that was like baffling. It was shit too.
It had all this weird new stuff in it.
Some weird early marketing deal, but whatever.
Saturn's weird.
Yeah,
but because of the fact these games are homeless vagabonds, I do find myself hooking my Saturn up more often than like my Dreamcast and playing these games, because I'll talk about some awesome game that no one's ever heard of and I'm like, well, there's nowhere else you can play it, so I'm going to put it in. Like, one of my favorite puzzle games of all time is called Kururin Pa.
Yeah.
And it came out for PlayStation, but it's not nearly as good as it is on Saturn, so I've put it in if I'm going to play it.
Oh, speaking of puzzle games, like also the Baku Baku
Animal.
Yeah, that is a really good puzzle game.
And Magical Drop, best versions except for Neo Geo. Oh, Saturn.
Saturn is such a good system.
See, you say that Saturn makes you sad when you think about it, but it feels honestly, I don't know. Saturn makes me kind of happy because every time I'm in a game shop in Akihabara or Nakano or someplace, and I go to the Saturn section, it's just like this wonderland of things I've just discovered. Like, I don't know what most of these games are, and I bet if I buy five of them, one of them is going to be really, really cool, and I will have discovered something rare and obscure that I never knew about.
I have a rule, like, every time I go to Japan, I have to buy at least one.
I usually buy a Saturn game, too, because you can get them on the cheap now, and it does take me back, because 95, 96, that was when I was first really getting into importing and really, like, paying attention to the industry, and it's kind of weirdly nostalgic now.
No, it's like, it gives me this little slice of a younger person's life, like, what life was like for me 10, 15 years ago. It actually kind of makes me remember, you know?
Like, I remember being in my
20s. Video games were, basically, yes, when I was in my 20s.
You know what really bothers me, though, is, like, it was one of the first systems to have, like built-in memory, which was fantastic, but if your battery isn't...
Oh, the battery. Right. That battery died faster than a VMU battery.
CR3023s, go buy them two at a time.
Yeah, because, like, if the... basically, if I'm going to play any Saturn game now, I've got to do it all over again because, like, I can't get my cartridge to recognize my memory card.
Because the cartridge slot is shit.
Just like any cartridge slot. It's bad. That Saturn cartridge slot is as bad as, like, an original NES cartridge slot.
You're blowing on shit.
Yeah. So, you know... All my game saves are lost, but you know it's my Saturn is still there, my American Saturn, my skeleton clear Japanese.
I've got a This Is Cool Blue clear Saturn.
Oh, that's a pretty good.
Wait, I just thought of another great Saturn game that's not actually great. Dark Savior by Climax. The weird spiritual.
No. Remember?
That was a successor to Darkstalker or Landstalker.
Landstalker.
It was like a spiritual successor to Lady Stalker.
but it did not take long. Possibly 2 or 3 weeks for you to realize how horrible that game looked.
It just fucked up. That game's weird. Weird as shit. Go back and play it.
Yeah, 2D sprite dudes walking around, really, really, really pixelated 3D backgrounds that are ugly.
Oh, but that's another weird thing. Okay, so the 3D controller that came with Knights, and it was called the 3D controller. Nothing else ever used it, almost. I mean, like, a few games could use it. I mean, it was just this, it was like a saucer. It was the weirdest design piece of shit. Like,
it felt very comfortable, though.
It did feel comfortable, but it was a weird-ass controller.
Weird-ass.
It looked like a little spaceship or something. You expected to see it streaking through the sky.
Felt
hippies,
good in my hands, though.
It just helps augment the Saturn is weird legacy.
Mm-hmm. So after having talked about this for the past hour, can we all agree that the Saturn was a horribly mismanaged and misdesigned system that nevertheless we love.
And yet triumphed over all that bureaucracy to be one of the...
it didn't really triumph that much.
It triumphed in my heart because there are literally dozens of games that I love for that system that I will play now and love them just as much. There are a lot of games, obviously, like Dark Savior, that you look back and you're like, man, that really wasn't that good.
But I think until 1997, in the system war at the time, which I was a part of, I worked at EB, and I was, you know, people were asking me for decisions, I was a Saturn supporter. Like, I really was, like, trying to sell people on Saturn, but it took, by 97, I was like, you know what? It ain't happening.
Trying to see you dissuade someone from buying a PlayStation, and it's just...
I'd be like, hey, Virtua Fighter 2 is twice the game that Toshinden is.
Was a virtual Hydlide?
Virtual Hydlide.
That was
one of their winners.
That was no good.
That was American developed, wasn't it?
No, Japanese.
No, was it?
But still, like, I
blame that on us.
Talking about this now, I just want to go home, plug it in, put in Sokyu Gurantai or Dodonpachi or Radiant Silver Gun.
Well, here's
and
a question:
a
do you go back
time.
And play more PS1 games or Saturn games now? Like, nowadays.
I play more PS1 just because I can pop it
more.
In my PS3 and, hey, there you go.
I don't know.
It's close for me. I have played Saturn in the last 3 months. I have.
Me too.
So
I think the Saturn was one of the greatest gaming systems of all time, like, despite all the other shit. Because now I'm not caring about, like, how bad, you know, Kalinske fucked up or how bad Bernie Stolar cut it off or whatever. All I know is that I've got a system here. It still turns on when I push power and still plays the games. And all the games that I've kept are great. Same thing with the Dreamcast. That's obviously for another podcast, but those were really, really awesome systems loaded with great games.
Okay, there is a slight issue with that. Huge problem. Unless you take really good care of your games, those things sucked in terms of disc scratches. Because the copy protection shit was on the outer ring of the disc, and that's the first place it's going to get fucked up.
I'm anal about my games.
Also, U.S. Saturn cases, much like the Sega CD cases, are the worst cases known to mankind.
Yeah, they're just fragile
and
garbage.
And they will destroy your games. Yeah.
It's really easy to just get a game fucked.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't take much.
Nope.
I was very fortunate to get into PlayStation right about the time they moved away from the long boxes to the normal size.
You know, they had to buy...
Wait, why did Sega do the retarded box? In the US.
Probably they had a bunch left over from Sega CD.
That's exactly the reason. They had a huge inventory of cases left over from the previous generation.
Because Japan never had those, right?
And the reason Sony initially put their games in those cases is because they couldn't buy enough of their cases, or where they weren't ready in time.
So they bought them from Sega. That's amazing.
Wow.
That's fact.
Terrifying.
That's an ugly fact.
But I agree with you, Milky. When I look back to Saturn, it seems like a very pure and, like, you know, almost naive system.
Yeah.
In a way, but it has its own character, and those games, most of them weren't anywhere else, much like Dreamcast. And, you know, it's an earlier, more innocent era.
There were so many cool little things that came from that era that just don't happen now. Like that Dural disc. Like, you remember they had those Virtua Fighter or CG portrait discs?
Ten different ones.
If you bought all 10, you got the Dural, and you mailed in your little OB or whatever, you would get the Dural. Or Shining Force. Was it premium?
Oh, the premium.
Disc?
If you bought all 3 Shining Force games and you send in your UPCs, Milk and I both got this awesome, like, premium content disc from Camelot.
But what about Christmas Nights?
Christmas Nights,
yeah. Things like that. You know, those kinds of things just don't happen
anymore.
And
weren't you a big fan of the Namie Amuro game?
No, I really hated that, actually. The AM2 developed one? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, I thought you liked it. I can't stand her.
Never mind.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually agree with you guys. Like, I was basically throwing out the...
I thought you were a big hater.
Devil's advocate. No, I was basically just trying to start some conversation.
You had me fooled, DeepFrog.
I do think that the Saturn had a lot of problems, and I you know, enumerated those.
Yeah, in America, wasteland, really.
The games are just so... so good. There's so many unique, interesting, original
KOU
games.
Geketai.
Good. Yeah. You know, I'm going to go play it again. I'm trying to find Moon My Heart. Because
it's not a great game.
I think I overpaid for it. I paid like $65 for it. Yeah.
I bought it new.
I bought it new. I didn't regret it.
It's not a great game. It's not a landmark in any way. It's just a really well-made 2D game with lots and lots of detail, lots of attention, lots of charm. It's just cute, fun, easy, not very stressful.
Yeah, I mean, you compare that game to like one of Sam's favorite games, like The Adventures of Little Ralph.
I was going
to
say that, yeah.
Jeremy has that now.
I have his copy now.
It's no Hermie Hopperhead, all right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think for the younger listeners, like, kids who weren't around for Saturn when it came out, it'd be an awesome thing to just go explore. Like, if you're into import games, like, there's so much there, and you can get a lot of money cheap.
Go to Japan. Next, you know, like, if you ever have a chance to go on vacation to Japan, just go there with
just
about $300.
Games, like,
$300 to spend. You will come back with so many great games that you might never have heard of, but you will really have a great time. Don't worry about the text because, you know, as long as you get an RPG,
Well, think about this. The systems, like TurboGrafx or the... what do you call it? The Turbo Engine?
Turbo Duo,
right? You've got all these, like, those really hardcore games, like the Dracula games and stuff that cost so much money or whatever. But those systems had, like, maybe like a small handful of games that are worth owning for that, right? You go back and you get a Sega Saturn now. You know, if you have, let's say, fairly broad gaming taste, like, you'll like shooters, you'll like platformers, you'll like fighting games, whatever, you will walk... any system like the Saturn, where you can say it's got at least 24 really awesome games, which it definitely does, that's a system worth owning.
Yeah. And you can't play those games most anywhere else now, so there you go.
All right, well, that I think wraps it up for Saturn. Thanks, guys. Let's do a quick... Oh, I was going to do reader mail, but you know what? I forgot my printouts.
Oh.
So some readers wrote...
Were they Saturn questions?
They like Saturn. They have good things to say about games that they enjoyed. Thanks a lot, readers. Next time I'll actually...
I'd be like, you're wrong. Gen War was not good.
Oh, my God.
That's what Sega America made, all right?
This week's retro news.
There was 1080 snowboarding. 1080
there was
snowboarding.
One game on Virtual Console.
That's a win.
Nintendo's releasing fewer and fewer Virtual Console games every week.
Well, if it's an N64 game, do they think it counts like triple?
No, because they've been decreasing. They've been publishing two per week lately, and now it's down to one per week.
But you know what?
Will they publish anything next week?
It's with the release of 1080 snowboarding, that's one... Really, it's almost... There's almost no reason for me to turn on a real N64 now, because that is one of the last great games that I need for...
They already do Wave Race?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
I'm trying to think. Is there anything we need? Ogre Battle 64. We need Ogre Battle. Ogre Bogo.
I liked Mischief Makers. Maybe it was misguided.
Rogue Squadron would be good, too. That's still my favorite Factor 5
Hybrid
game.
Heaven?
Mission Impossible.
Pod Racer?
Episode 1 Racer.
But that was also on Dreamcast.
That was on everything.
Dreamcast Superior. Anyway.
Yeah, I can't think of that many more N64 games we really need to see.
Is there anything retro on Xbox Live Arcade or PSN this week?
Why, Res HD?
Awesome.
Sam, you've been playing that. What do you think so far?
I fucking love it.
Yeah.
My review's going up today, and I gave it a 10 out of 10.
Whoa!
Yeah. Whoa,
yeah,
really?
I mean, it's like...
Yeah.
I mean, here you've got, I mean, in my opinion, deserves one of it. The best games, probably. It's one of my top five, probably. Top 10, at least.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like 10 bucks on, and it's
$10
HD.
Bucks.
Yeah.
It's
that, like, yeah. This, oh, okay. Whole thing makes that me happy sense. Because I wanted to get that game when it first came out. But, like, during that month that it was actually available in America...
Sega, again, with the low print run. Thanks,
Sega. I did not have the money at that point. I was between jobs. And
did it not sell because it wasn't, you know, the right game for its
no,
time?
No,
because
they made
did
three.
It not sell because
they
Sega
actually,
only made two dozen?
They discontinued it before it even shipped.
Yeah.
Like,
what?
they stopped... This is what I've read a few places. They stopped publishing it before it had actually launched. They just, I don't know if they didn't believe in it or what.
Well, I mean, I'm sure retail wasn't entirely yeah. excited.
It had a very
me.
Low now, initial order.
Yeah, now here,
and a clearance.
Yeah,
I remember look, I bought three copies for $20 and gave it to my friends.
No, when it came out, it was like surrounded by stuff like Metal Gear Solid 2, Final Fantasy X, Vice City. All those games were coming out at that time. Like, who gave a shit
all
about
all my friends like, were like, Paris, you got to play this. It's so
I know.
Good.
I mean,
it's such your kind of game.
But seriously,
and,
like, you know, we were all saying that as critics at the time. We were like, oh, this is a really awesome game. But still, you know, with all those other kick-ass games out there, like, who really was going to spend the time?
Right. And, I have it on PS2 now, right. But as an import, and it's kind of a pain in the ass to hook up an import system to my TV. But having it in HD on Xbox Live,
and
like, I'm going home tomorrow night and downloading
it. No loading times, no nothing.
Did you try it with three controllers vibrating on your
lap? No, one was definitely enough.
Yeah.
But that,
no, you put one behind your head, one at your feet, and then you...
I think a video of Sam playing with three controllers on his lap would be a lot of hits.
I don't think it's going to do quite as well as the Game Girl Advance.
Jane Picard must be going crazy right about now. It's like all these Xbox controllers taped to her body. That's awesome.
Wow. But yeah, okay. It is so good. It is, and it's just like, you know, if you were... You know, if before you were kind of scared of the concept, you were like, ah, music shooter, you know, should I, you know, it's $10.
$10 as opposed to, you know, $100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone
just
who doesn't buy this deserves
it
to fail.
Then the best thing is, it's not like, you know, like when something like, say, Street Fighter 2 gets ported, you know, you think objectively it's a relatively decent port, but it's got some problems, right? No. This is the way port should be done. You take the original, you make it better. And it's like, you know, it's not like, oh, I like the rough charm in the original. The original wanted to be razor sharp. It wanted to be like vector graphics.
It's such a clean looking game, so precise and geometrical. Having it with actual HD graphics is
Milky was talking to Mizuguchi about it, he said it was based off the Dreamcast version.
Yeah,
which
was better. That code, yeah. Right? You know, but the Dreamcast one was capped at 30 frames per second. PS2 version was occasionally hit 60 frames per second, but it still had slowdowns, like when you're warping into a new area and, like, let's say all the Egyptian levels, like rose up out of the ground and, you know, filled in around you. No slowdown now. 5.1 sound. Mm-hmm. You can play it as big as you fucking want to, and it's just beautiful, right?
I don't know. It's like, even just as a game, I think it's gotten better with time.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly why. Like, maybe it's just like, you know,
because it's so unique. No one's really done that.
Well, now
it's
really ahead of the curve. I don't know. It definitely brought back the vector thing.
I think it was
one of the first.
Anyway. Yeah, but I mean, that actual style of gameplay where the music is just deeply integrated into the fabric of the actual.
Other than like student projects, I haven't seen anything
I think that the industry has finally caught up to Rez. I'm not trying to make some overblown, profound statement, but like, music games are now really a part of like everybody's consciousness. People who don't normally play video games will play a music game like Guitar Hero or something like that. You know, it's still techno, so it depends on your taste in music. But now, you know, at the time when it came out, how many music games were there? There's like Parappa.
Bust a Move, that was it.
Yeah. Bust a Groove in America.
Yeah.
But we still haven't gotten away from like that basic push buttons in time with the music thing.
Right.
We haven't actually combined it with any other kind of gameplay. Again, like, other than like
every one
projects.
Of Konami's Bimini games were like, you know, just button pushers, but pushing them in time. You know, but this is you don't have to push a button in time. Like, you lock on to things, like, you know, like you did in Panzer Dragoon. But when you let go, all the shots go off and you hear them like in rhythm.
That was
rhythm.
The brilliant thing about this. Yeah, you're not trying to make the music, but you are.
Things show up and you target
game,
them just right,
music.
So it does
it's
work.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So next week. We need Space Channel 5 HD.
When we did our Q cover on 1UP like a year ago, I really took all three of those games, like Space Channel 5 1 and 2, and then Rez for a spin. Rez obviously not only holds up, but it really feels even better now. It's just like, man, this game just does not stop being good. But Space Channel 5's formula is so simple.
No, I mean, that's an example of just the button pushing with the whatever.
Well, I kind of feel like everything that Q has done since Rez has been trying to match Rez, and the only game that's really done it for me has been Luminous.
Yeah.
Which also gives you
that,
like...
Even though you're wearing a Meteos shirt...
I am wearing a Meteos shirt, but I don't really like Meteos that much.
I don't like
the design.
You can't play Meteos for a long time because it eventually just pounds you.
Yeah.
It's a better multiplayer game than Luminous.
Yeah, Luminous is just really nice to relax, but it's also a game where you're building music, you're building rhythms and sounds, but you're not just pressing buttons. You're actually using concrete gameplay that you'd find in another genre, another kind of game, and actually creating the soundtrack by completing that other kind of game. So it really does a good job of like Rez, also integrating music with another kind of gameplay beyond button pushing.
Yeah.
And that's why I can still play Luminous and love it.
You know,
made it through all this. Nobody has said synesthesia yet. That's great. that was the other great part about Saturn. That was the pretension. It was fantastic. We invented synthespians around there.
I thought that was on PC.
No,
another machinima.
I was thinking LARP.
I mentioned this on the the One Up show, but one of the things that bothers me about the prospects for Rez on Xbox Live Arcade is that I'm not really sure how many people are making it a priority for themselves to really remember it. You got all these people arguing about load times and Devil May Cry 4, stupid crap like that. Seriously, spending time on message boards talking about dumb shit when they could be downloading Rez.
Is there any chance for Rez to come to virtual, WiiWare or PSN, or is it exclusive?
It would be PSN, I think. Yeah. But I really think.
I think it would play really well with the Wii Remote.
I emailed you this at 4 in the morning last night because after I wrote my review. But one thing too is on PS3, Rumble isn't widely available yet, so it kind of wouldn't make sense just yet because Rumble was a big part of the game too.
That's true.
He said, right now it makes sense on the 360. It feels right. But I think when we were talking with him, whether or not it's Rez 2 or
something else,
or this Rez HD on PSN as well, I think he kind of was indicating that it's going to eventually end up there too.
T-Frog, I have a question. Since any second now, Smash Brothers Brawl is hitting Japan. Does Monsieur Frog have anything to say about that in a retro concept? Are you waiting to get your hands on it?
Fortunately, I'm not required to play or write about Smash Brothers, so it's all good.
Oh, you know what? That would be a good game for a virtual console.
Rumors that Smash Brothers will be showing up on Virtual Console about the time Brawl appears.
That's going to sell a lot. That's still a good game.
Have you commented on the playable demos in Smash Brothers Brawl, which are basically Virtual Console demos?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that's going to work.
That's a label crossing.
I haven't heard of it. Yeah, so you can play in the game. Yeah. There's a history segment.
Now, are they going to give you playable demos of the games for every character?
Are we going to get Ice Climbers and Kid Icarus?
Yeah, because that would mean that they would be doing Earthbound. They would be doing Fire Emblem.
Exactly.
And those are things exciting.
Ask Iwata interview on Wii.com, he asked Sakurai, the creator, and he says, he names we're going to have demos of the games. And he names six specifically, including things Super Metroid, and Star Fox 64.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I like that.
So you would think that every character has a demo in the game.
That is so cool.
I would like to see Earthbound on VC.
I hear it's coming.
Yeah, everyone would like to see Earthbound on VC. Anytime you mention, what would you like to see on VC? Earthbound, Mother.
If Nintendo's going to bring over Sin and Punishment to VC, they like
Earthbound's
money.
Already translated.
Yeah. So there's for them to do.
They just have this strange aversion to doing anything with Earthbound in the U.S. It's very strange. Did you see the leaked images from the
trailer.
Manual or whatever? Yeah. The battle with Pokey?
Yeah.
I don't like Smash Brothers gameplay, but I admit I might play it just for the single player mode because it looks. It's like a romp through every classic Nintendo game ever.
That's hard to resist. Smash Brothers has always been. It's been fan service.
It's exhausting.
They made more of a game out of it. He doesn't like people.
I cannot stand the fighting aspect of Smash Brothers.
I'm kind of there too.
The single player mode looks like it could be fun. Yeah.
I like it.
I didn't get Smash Brothers for the longest time, and then when Melee came out, and I sat down and really played it, after 5 hours, I kind of got it. I was like, I've been playing Smash Brothers wrong my whole life, and now it's really fun.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think all those people who confuse Smash Brothers with a real fighting game have a point?
Well, I think
Smash
Brothers does have more depth than it appears, but it's not a real fighting game.
Okay. Yeah. Shane Bettenhausen says it's news at 11.
Deep, but not a real fighting
Smash
game.
Brothers,
gonna
not a real fighting
to
game.
Watch. I could never really play it much. I always just pick Jigglypuff and go to sleep in a corner somewhere, and it actually sometimes win because somebody will walk into me on accident.
That's awesome.
Yeah, or Mr. Game & Watch and just shoot bacon at people all day.
If I could just take the concentrated nostalgia out of Smash Brothers and spin it into something that I enjoy, that would be my ultimate.
Well, you never know. You have to get the game. They may have a weak sauce mode, and you can just like go there for all the fan service and not and avoid the game altogether.
Well, I think that might be what the single-player mode
is. Yeah, they said Subspace Emissary on Easy is like,
although,
completely
the fact
easy.
That Hige, what's his name?
Kazuhige Nojima
wrote the best scenarist
in video gaming?
Oh, he wrote the scenario for Final Fantasy VII. He's disqualified from being the best anything.
His heart was in the right place.
Maybe.
You're right, Jeremy. The narrative of Final Fantasy VII was not completely crucial to the popularity of the role-playing genre in America. You're right.
No, it was the visuals.
I thought we'd make it through a podcast without talking about Final Fantasy VII.
I know. Sorry, I shouldn't have brought up Nojima. It's just when I learned about that yesterday.
You were wise to not have me on that podcast.
It made my heart sink a little.
It is a surprise, though. You know,
it's
to have
weird.
Like the Final Fantasy scenario writer creating the backstory for.
He was like, I need a good story. Who should I go to? How about the best video game storyteller of modern age?
I don't know if he's the best video game storyteller. I wouldn't say that.
Oh God!
I just threw up.
He might be responsible for a lot of the most popular games, but I think Final Fantasy's always had a lot more going for it, like flashy CG cinemas, emo characters.
This is a debate for another time, a time I wasn't invited to.
Yeah, I need Mario in a trench coat.
No, actually, Shane, you were invited.
Oh,
you didn't show up.
I had the day off.
Yeah,
sorry.
So who's to blame except Shane Bettenhausen? Yep. All right, well, that's enough bickering.
There's never enough bickering.
The Sega lovin' continues in our next episode as we talk about the 20th anniversary of Phantasy Star. So send me a love letter.
If you think I like Saturn, wait till you get a load of Phantasy Star.
Give me your cat.
Yeah, expect lots of discussion with Shane telling everyone how he's the biggest Phantasy Star ever.
Fan, you mean? No, I'm actually the second biggest Phantasy Star fan.
What did I say you were?
You're a Phantasy Star.
You're the biggest Phantasy Star ever.
You are the biggest Phantasy Star.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah. I don't get that. Like, when we were in Tokyo, and we were doing the Kojima podcast, we were discussing Metal Gear Solid 2. Shane was vehement that he was the number one
Metal Gear Solid fan.
Bigger Metal Gear Solid 2 fan than anybody at the podcast.
And Mark McDonald, formerly of 1UP, he was like, no, I'm a bigger Metal Gear fan. And then he had to go improve it by working on Metal Gear Solid 4. So, and way to go, Mark.
Shane,
you proved me
again.
Wrong.
And then I actually asked out loud, I was like, is this something that you tell people?
This is going to end with you like keeping him in a bed, breaking his ankles,
really?
Getting your head smashed with a porcelain
like,
pig or
something. Hey, baby, let me deconstruct Metal Gear Solid 2 for you. Oh, wait, it's already deconstructed by itself.
Biatch.
Man, if only it was Rose who was at the bar, I'd totally pick her up.
You mean Kojima's wife?
No, I mean Raiden's girlfriend.
No, you mean Kojima's wife that Rose is based on.
Hot.
You have a thing for Kojima's wife. No wonder he doesn't like you.
Yeah. He likes me, though.
He doesn't dislike me.
Sure he does.
He told
this
me.
This podcast is over.
Yeah. All right. Next, no, not next week. Next time. 2 weeks from now, yes.